Well, it's about time to get going, so you take your Bibles and open to Proverbs. We're going to start in chapter 9. So we have just a little bit of introductory material from the early chapters of Proverbs that we want to return to, and then quickly after summing that up, we'll move forward with the actual assigned topic, which is integrity. So we're going to start with the subject of integrity today, but work on some of the introductory statements. So very glad that you can be with us. And let's start with a prayer. I'm going to call on Les, if you would, to lead our thoughts.
Dear God, we are so grateful for that beautiful morning and the time that we can gather together on the first day of the week to enrich our knowledge of you, to worship you, to sing praises, to recognize and remember you at the Lord's Supper, to pray and communicate with our Creator through Jesus Christ. And we pray that you be with us in this hour and help Philip to convey the things that he studied so that they will be helpful to us who are listening, and that we might become more and more like Jesus our Lord. And it's in his name we pray.
Amen. So when we're talking about something that's a physical structure, maybe a building or a bridge or even a table, and we talk about its integrity, integrity of the building or the bridge, what are we talking about?
What's it made of?
Maybe what the construction materials and how firm they are, as reliable they are. Okay? The soundness of it. Is it reliable? Will it withstand weight and pressure and things such as that? Is it properly constructed and something that is not a danger to anybody? Or rather, you can depend on it, kind of thing. So we're going to start looking at Proverbs in the book of Proverbs, which we've looked a little bit at some Proverbs, but we've mostly talked about the subject of Proverbs as a piece of writing and the subject of wisdom and folly. But today we're going to start looking at Proverbs, or we're going to start with Proverbs related to personal integrity. However, there is just some really important material that we didn't get to Wednesday night that I want to go back and look at, and it has to do with the fact that the first 9 chapters of Proverbs provide us an introduction to the subject of wisdom. There are some proverbial statements in chapters 1 through 9, but mostly what you have is a running commentary about the nature of wisdom, the nature of folly, and all those kinds of things. So I want you to go back with me to chapter 9 and look at verse 7 to 12. We just barely got done this Wednesday night, but it is worthy of more attention than we just quickly gave it. So let's start reading this, first of all. Daryl, can you read verse 7 to 12 for us, please? Chapter 9.
He who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself, and he who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. Do not reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase his learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years of life will be added to you. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself, and if you scoff, you alone will hear it.
All right, thank you very much. I want us to pair that reading with the statement over in 8:13, okay? Daryl, go back to 8:13, and let's put that next to chapter 9, 7 through 12.
The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance and the evil way, and the perverted mouth I hate.
So I want you to keep that in mind, pride and arrogance I hate, okay? And going back to verses 7 to 12. So when you look at verses 7 to 12, we're sort of dissecting a choice to follow the path of wisdom or the path of folly, which in essence is what chapters 1 through 9 are about, the two paths before us. What are the different elements of this choice between wisdom and folly? For instance, there is one kind of person that's mentioned first who chooses folly. Who is it? What's he called? The scoffer, okay? He's called scoffer in verse 7. In verse 8, anybody have another translation? I think scoffer is pretty common. Okay, so who are we talking about here when it comes to a scoffer? When we think of somebody who's a scoffer, we think sort of first automatically about someone who mocks something. You scoff at something, it's like mocking, and you're more than just questioning it, you're even more than doubting it. You're actually rejecting it and you're tearing it apart, and usually in a closed-minded way before you've really thought it through or looked at it and so forth. So a scoffer mentality is one who rejects, and in the book of Proverbs, it's commonly depicted as one who rejects God and rejects wisdom, which comes from God. I want you to look at a couple of statements that help us to understand even more what a scoffer is. Look at chapter 21, verse 24. And Vince, can you read that for us? Chapter 21, verse 24. And then shortly after that, Dave, can you read for us in just a moment, chapter 15, verse 12? So first of all, 21, 24, what does it say about a scoffer?
Proud, haughty, scoffer are his names. He who acts without insolent pride.
Okay. So what characteristics are emphasized about the scoffer here?
Proud and haughty.
That's right. Proud, arrogant, haughty, all those kinds of things. Exactly right. So you understand why he's a scoffer. He thinks he's got all the answers. He doesn't need to listen to anybody else. He doesn't need to consider another perspective. He does not look at himself as being a foolish person who can help me. And this is why chapter 15, verse 12 adds to this. Dave, can you read that verse, please?
The scoffer does not love when he reproves him. He will not go to the wise.
All right, we'll come back in a moment, chapter 9, about how you respond to reproof. But it's that last section I want you to see of that proverb, that last statement, which is a synonymous proverb. He will not go to whom?
The wise.
Because likely, according to this verse, likely if he goes to the wise person, what's he going to get?
A reproof.
So we see that emphasized in chapter 9. But this really reinforces a point that we've made early on, and that is to choose the path of wisdom means to seek out wise counsel. You're not born with wisdom. You have to seek it. You have to work for it. You have to value it and desire it. And one resource of God's wisdom is with a godly person who has wisdom. And we emphasized this early on too, and it's a great time to make this point. Going to someone else for wise counsel doesn't mean you're foolish. It means you're wise. Going to someone else who you think has some wisdom to share doesn't make you less independent. Because as we'll see in this section here in chapter 9, ultimately what path you choose is up to you. You make the choice, and you're going to bear the consequences or reap the benefits. And so no one truly, completely controls another person. Nobody. You can surrender control of yourself to someone else. Someone can control your body. They can shackle you and lock you in a prison or something like that. But they can't really control your essence. And that is your character, your heart, your mind, your thoughts, your values, your disposition, and all those kinds of things. And so it's the scoffer who refuses to go to wise people. And so I tell you, if you want to run the thing way, 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 way down the road, when you're younger, if you go to wise people, one day, you're going to be that person other people are going to come to. And if you think you've always got the answers and you don't need other people's help, one day you'll look around and nobody's going to listen to you. Because you've not gained any wisdom. You have nothing to offer. So, interesting enough, you know, we're so oriented in our New Testament studies of how the path of following Christ is certainly an unselfish one, no doubt about it. And we can see that selfishness is a quality of the fool in the book of Proverbs. He's just wanting what he wants now and he doesn't think about anybody else or the consequences or whatever. But I want you to watch in the Proverbs how so often the path of wisdom is the best thing you can do for yourself. You are really, really helping self out by being wise. Now, it's not in a quick fix kind of way. It's not in a fleshly, pleasurable way. It's not in the immediate, you know, instant gratification kind of way. But in the long run, there's nothing you can do for yourself any better than walking in wisdom. So, what else here? How does the scoffer react to correction and reproof? What does it say? Verse 7 to 9. When you go to reprove a scoffer, how does he react?
Hate you.
He hates you. He doesn't want to listen to that. Okay? The reaction of the scoffer when he's corrected and reproved shows that he's haughty and arrogant, close-minded, he's foolish, all these kinds of things. This is a really great test for us. This is really part of this dissection of what are my choices. When I am corrected or reproved, how do I respond? You know, and sometimes we have an emotional reaction at first, but when the dust settles, do we throw it out? Do we reject that wisdom? Do we reject that correction? Do we reject that person? Or do we look for the value of it and possibly humbly realize there's something to this? There's something I can get out of it. Yeah, Les.
Well, this reminds me of the back and forth, the days of GPS. Men were often noted as never wanting to stop and give directions when they were lost. Because there was a certain sense, and I think I was that way too, I didn't want to stop and give directions. And just keep driving and find my way some way or another. But I think the principle that you see it so often here in Proverbs is the idea of a path. That what the wise are going to lead you in a good path, and if you're just obstinate and you know, you don't want to ask anybody, you don't want to look at a map, you don't want to find true north, you know, you don't know where you're going, that idea of not in the larger metaphor of life itself, if you're just unwilling to ask directions, that's the person who goes through his life having random and difficult circumstances and a hard life oftentimes because they haven't gained that ability to recognize what other people can help them to find their way, and they don't. Another part of that is recognizing when you're lost. Recognizing that, oh, I don't know where I'm at. I need to stop and ask somebody. Mm-hmm. And I've been in that situation. I've been in towns and gotten turned around and had an appointment, you know, to go somewhere. And at a certain time, you know, I'm supposed to be there at 2:00. And it's, you know, 5:10, and I still don't know where the place is. That kind of thing. So it's a very bulky sort of thing, you know, it's a stressful way to live.
Yeah.
When you don't know where you're going, or you're lost on the way there. But what the Bible gives us is it tells us where we're going, and it tells us the way there. Yeah. And all we have to do is consult it. And also, in you know, the father to the son or the parent to the child idea here that is repeated through the Proverbs, relying and trusting people who trust in the Lord.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great parallel, and it's really a good mind picture for the Proverbs, and that is you're really lost, whether you think you are or not. You come to an intersection, and you get out, and there's this old gentleman sitting on the bench in front of the store, and you say, which way to so-and-so? And he goes, that way. He goes, no, I think it's back this way. He's like, I've lived here 75 years. It's that way. And you're like, no, it's not. You get in your car, and you go the other way. Now, we understand, we've talked about this, just because you have age and experience doesn't mean you're wise. Okay? But there is something to be said for age and experience. But that's part of wisdom, is discerning, even among experienced people who are the godly people, even among aged people who are the wise people. But there's a good chance you'll find some with age and experience. And so that's an interesting kind of parallel there. And you also see that the opposite of the one who refuses to be corrected, and actually they get, you know, they're vehement in their reaction when they're corrected, is the person that says at the end of verse 9, teach a righteous man and he will increase in learning. One of the reasons why the wise, righteous person will take correction is because they're humble, but also because they want to learn. They want to do things better. And so they have a desire there. But you'll never learn unless you know you need to learn. You'll never learn unless you realize I have a need to acquire more understanding. And there's a degree of humility there. So really what we're seeing here, when you look at 8:13 and you look over here at 9:10, okay, about, you know, wisdom, that pride and arrogance is a very important element here in this choice. A prideful, arrogant person is going to follow the path of foolishness, okay? They really are. And it's a humble person who's going to take correction and grow and improve, and thus become a wise person themselves. And we'll go back and look at that chapter 9, verse 12. We talked about this really quickly Wednesday night. Ultimately, what is chapter 9, verse 12 saying about these choices we have about wisdom or foolishness? What's the essence of verse 12 of chapter 9? What did we say Wednesday night? This is about where we left off.
Well, the wise person will grow. I mean, he'll become, you know, you're wise to yourself. You
right.
Benefit yourself. But the scoffer, he's going to end up bearing the boot.
He's going to bear.
He's going to bear right. Himself.
Okay. Translations vary a little bit here. I'm reading from the English Standard. It says, if you're wise, you're wise for yourself, which is a little bit more literal. In other words, if you gain wisdom, who's going to benefit?
You.
You are. And if you're a scoffer, that foolish, arrogant scoffer who won't listen, you're going to bear it. You're going to pay the price. Yes, sir.
This discussion reminds me of what Jesus said when he said that we weren't to give that which was holy to the dogs or cast pearls, or it's like casting pearls before swine. What was he saying there? He was saying that some people aren't going to see this as something of value.
Right. Yeah.
And so they're going to reject you and they're going to attack you.
Yeah.
And so the way we can personally look at it, as you were bringing up, when someone rebukes us, the first thing, my first reaction is defensive.
Right.
But we need to understand that rebuke can be of great value.
Right.
And so if we see it that way, then we're going to examine what that person is saying to us to see
right.
if he's correct or not.
Right. And really, these first 9 chapters, they're saying, since there are 2 paths, wisdom and folly, some people aren't going to listen. Some people aren't going to value this. It's going to be like pearls before swine to them. Don't be that person. That's what it's getting at there. Yeah. Well, let's look at the subject of integrity. I have to say, might as well say it now, Proverbs aren't easy to teach in a way. You don't do Proverbs, I don't think, like you do other things, because what can you do with it except, yep, there they are. It's like me just saying, yep, there it is, look at it. That's about all I can do in a way, except maybe throw some things out to stimulate your thinking, stimulate some discussion that enhances it. But it's sort of like a tour guide where you say, yep, look up there. Okay? Right, Dave just got back from the Upper West. I mean, when you see those big mountains up there, I mean, it doesn't need a whole lot of tour guiding, right? You just say, look at that mountain. It speaks for itself. I mean, it's impressive. So that kind of thing. So that's what we've got here. We've got things that are self-standing that speak for themselves, but it's great to put them together and discuss them. So let's talk about integrity, and let's start here with the definition of integrity. So in the Proverbs, this is probably a good functional definition, but in the Proverbs, this is the definition I think that fits. Now, some translations don't use the word integrity. Some translations do, but the concept of integrity is laced all through the Proverbs. It's the idea of possessing honest and upright and godly character. In everything, all your relationships and all your dealings, even mundane things, which ends up bringing a blessing to yourself in the long run. Okay, that's integrity. Sometimes we use the term character, which is fits here too, but sometimes you can have poor character or bad character, but integrity means someone who has a solid character, and this is what we're talking about. It's not merely just somebody who's strong, but somebody who's strong in being honest, upright, and godly, and thus they have that integrity. So let's look at some statements here in general about this. Let's go to 11:3. 11:3, and Tristan, I'm going to have you read 11:3 here in just a moment, and then Rick, I'm going to have you read 11:12 in just a moment, and then Rachel Messer, 28:18.
11:12 or 11:20?
11:20, sorry. Looking too many places, sorry. Don't listen to me, follow the script.
All right. There is no 11:20, so I'm in the wrong chapter. Sorry.
Okay. Again, don't listen to Rick, follow the script. Don't listen to me, don't listen to Rick. Okay. All right. Go ahead. It's all right. He's probably still on medication. It's okay. We've been cutting some slack for a long time. All right, go ahead, Tristan.
The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy them.
All right, thank you. Rick, 11:20, please.
The perverse in heart are an abomination to the Lord, but the blameless in their walk are his delight.
All right, and Rachel, 28:18.
He who walks blamelessly will be delivered, but he who is crooked will fall all at once.
All right. Hopefully you can be looking at those at the same time, put your finger in the different spots. So what's the contrast to the person who's upright, who has integrity? What's the name or the description given to the opposite of the upright person or the righteous person?
Perverse.
They're perverted or they're crooked? Okay. No doubt people here in Western North Carolina have the expression like they did where I grew up, speaking of somebody who's dishonest, he's as crooked as a dog's hind leg. Or that one, I know he is. So. He's heard them all. Okay. And if you ever look at a dog's hind leg, it's all bent, okay, all crooked. What do we mean by the idea of somebody being crooked or perverse? Again, there's that connotation of path that we've seen so many times. They're walking a crooked path. What does that connotation mean, crooked or perverse?
Well, they're not straightforward.
Okay, now we talk about somebody being honest, being straight with us, or straightforward. Interesting. Yeah?
There's another common proverb sort of that's out there that describes integrity, and that is someone who says what they mean and mean what they say.
Right.
And so someone who is crooked or perverse is the kind of the opposite of that. They don't say what they mean, and they don't mean what they say. So that you cannot count on what they say, and you're not likely to trust them that they're going to follow through with anything that they say.
Okay. This is interesting when you put all this together. Somebody who's honest with us and upright, they're very dependable, and it's sort of a simple kind of communication and understanding and relationship. Somebody who is blowing a lot of smoke, they're not reliable, they're not true to their word. They'll say one thing, you come back the next day and like, well, I didn't mean that, what I meant was this. And after a week or two with them, your head's spinning. Because they take you this way, and 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 they jerk you over here instead of just being straight with you. So a crooked or perverse person is taking that path, which is to be straight, level, and simple, and they're making it complex by all these twists and turns because they're manipulating everything. You don't know how to, you can't rely on them. You don't know what kind of, it's like a calculator, and you put in, you know, 20 plus 20, and you get 35, and you put 20 plus 20 again, you get 85. You're like, your mind's just, well, what does it do with this calculator? I can't get a straight answer from it. As opposed to 20 plus 20, 40, 20 plus 20, 40. Every time you hit it, 40. That's just a very simple kind of thing. So, and what is the emphasis in these three proverbs? What do you see is an emphasis in contrast between the person who has integrity and the crooked person?
crooked are destroyed by their own treachery.
It's coming back on them. It's the idea of outcomes. You see outcomes? Look at all three of these. I think maybe one of them doesn't talk about outcomes. But there is an emphasis in outcomes here, which goes back to this idea of wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to see down the path and say, if I make this choice, this is where it's going to take me. It may take a month. It may take a year or 10 years. Foolishness is where it's like, oh, I don't want to look down the path. I just want to do this thing right now that I feel like doing and I want to do. And if I look down the road where this is going, it doesn't look like it's going to be a pretty scene, but I don't care about that. That's the foolish person. They blind themselves to outcomes. And that's a motif in the Proverbs. Look how that so many Proverbs talk about the outcome. The wise man is telling us, if you do this, if you think this way, if you live this way, this is what's going to happen. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I just thought about sin itself makes our path.
Yeah.
It complicates things. It puts obstacles on the road that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Yes. Burdens. Absolutely, it does. And there's the idea again in these statements about walking in uprightness and walking in perversion. And note that emphasis in the Proverbs. And this is a point we've made before, and that is, we're not necessarily talking about a one-time decision. One-time decisions can be huge. But usually it's the thousand decisions that we make. The thousand little decisions that we make that really determine the path. And here we're talking about integrity or not having integrity. Let's look at some dimensions of integrity. And let's look at the idea of fair dealings. Chapter 11, verse 1. Chapter 11, 1. Zachary, can you read that for us? 11, 1.
A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight.
So what are we talking about here when it comes to a balance or a scale and weights? Well, here's what we're talking about. We're talking about the scanner at the grocery store. We're talking about the pump at the gas station. In other words, when you go to have a financial transaction where you're trading goods for goods or goods and currency, there has to be some determination of how much you're getting. So this is just an image, and you know how this works, but you know we don't have these today, but just so you can have a visual of it. You'll see that these statements, and we're going to look at several of them, will talk about scales or a balance, which is the contraption, the apparatus, and weights, which are the objects that you put on one side to weigh the product or the good. Now, obviously, this is meant to weigh small things, like gold or silver or something like that. And then you have larger ones that would weigh things like wheat, barley, and so forth. And in ancient times, they either had measurement stones or they had actual weights, which would be made out of some kind of metal, okay? Now, what we're talking about, and so we're going to use modern language here. So you would have a stone or a weight that represented an ounce. Didn't have ounces then, but let's just go with ours. And you'd have a stone or a weight that was equal to a pound. And so if you're buying wheat or you're selling wheat or you're trading for gold or something like that, you're going to weigh it out and you're going to use the standards, either stones or weights, to determine how much there is. Well, dishonest traders would trick people in two ways. Either the scales or the balance was messed up. The actual apparatus was fixed to favor the merchant. Or the stones or the weights were not accurate. And this is interesting. Archaeologists, when they are uncovering layers of remains of things, have actually uncovered like the equipment of merchants, and they actually have found, though similar in size, weights and stones that were of different weights. In other words, a merchant would have like a heavy one-pounder and a light one-pounder. So if he's buying wheat from you, he's going to use the light stones. So you put more and more and more and more wheat on the balance. Okay? When he goes to sell that wheat, he's going to use the heavy stones so he doesn't put as much wheat on it. So he's buying more wheat for the money than he should be, and he's selling less wheat for the money than he should be getting. And this is a real practical issue. So next time you're at the gas pump, you want a modern kind of idea on this. Next time you're at the gas pump, what's that little sticker? There's a sticker on there somewhere from the state, some state agency, and indicates the last time that pump was checked for accuracy. So that when you pump 5 gallons of gas, you're getting 5 gallons of gas, not 4 gallons and a half. Okay, and then the gas station's getting, you know, cheating you. So this is what we're talking about. Well, look how many times this is talked about in the Proverbs. All right, let's keep looking at these. So Ken, will you read 16:11? And Neil, will you read 20:10? And Vince, will you read, sorry, that's all we got. Yeah, 20:23, okay? So we've already read 11:1. I'm sorry, where am I at? Yeah, Ken, you're reading 16:11. There we go.
The just balance and scales are the Lord's. All the weights in the bag are his work.
All right, Neil, 20:10.
Diverse weights and diverse measures, both of them alike, are an abomination to Jehovah.
All right, 20:23, then.
Differing weights are an abomination to the Lord, and a false scale is not good.
Okay. Is everyone a merchant or a trader of goods? No. A lot of people have to, almost everybody has to interact with a merchant or a trader. And so this is a specific manifestation of fair dealings. But I want you to understand how that this principle applies to a lot of things in interacting with other human beings. First thing I want us to see is what the text is emphasizing. Do these texts talk about good business principles from a commercial standpoint, an economic standpoint? Do these texts talk about the financial outcomes? Do they talk at all about any of that? They don't. We said a while ago that oftentimes in the Proverbs you see an emphasis regarding why a path is wise is regarding outcome. These texts don't emphasize outcome. You don't have false scales or a false balance. You don't have false weights because in the long run you're going to lose money. That's not the point. What's the point? What's emphasized in every one of these?
What is an abomination to God?
What God thinks of it. Regardless whether you get away with it or not, think about it. Are there some people through time who have cheated others and gotten rich? Oh, yes. That's not the point. The point is God. What does God think of it? So the point here is the idea, it's the principle. And it's not even the principle of what's right and wrong. It's the principle of what God says is right and wrong. And when it comes to raising kids, we're going to have a whole class on child rearing. When it comes to raising kids, the emphasis here, this is a good example, is not like this is right because it's just right. This is right because God says it's right, and this is a terrible thing because God says it's wrong. And when it comes to teaching children right from wrong, a lot of people say, oh, it's wrong to steal. You shouldn't steal that from your classmate. You shouldn't steal that from your brother or something like that. What does God think of stealing? It's wrong or it's right because of what God says. And that's a very, it's somewhat of a subtle thing, but it's a huge thing. That when children are taught right from wrong, the emphasis needs to be it's right or wrong because God says it's right or wrong. Because actually a parent is just another human being. Who's making the rules here? Is it the parents? Is it society? Because we all know that parents and society can be wrong. And so that's a really, it's shelling that in these Proverbs, that it's what God thinks of a just balance. It's what God thinks of you know, the wrong kinds of stuff. Rick, give it to him.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of Paul's admonition to servants in Ephesians 6, where he says, you serve your masters with fear and trembling in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ.
Right.
And he says, masters, do the same things to them. And the what we're supposed to see in that is that we're not working for that person. We're not having to do a deal, selling something to an individual. We need to think of it as we're selling it to God. How would God see this if I was acting this way?
Right.
And he was the recipient of my action.
Right. Yeah, don't steal from your employer. Why? Well, you may get fired. Well, you may get fired. Don't steal from your employer, because God doesn't want you to do that. Yeah, yeah.
There's a well-known allegorical statue that I think of in regards to this discussion. Like, an allegorical statue was like a statue of liberty. Is a figure of a woman that represents something that is intangible. So there's a statue of justice that we usually call Lady Justice. Mm-hmm. And Lady Justice, you'll find oftentimes in a courtroom or close to a courthouse, sometimes on top of a courthouse. And she has in her right hand, she has a scale like that. And she is blindfolded. Mm-hmm. And she has a sword in the other hand.
Mm-hmm.
She usually goes down to the ground. You watch about the scene. And what that means, symbolically interpreted, is that Lady Justice is, she weighs, and this is in a court, and we're talking about that not everything, that different ways of applying the idea of scales and a right measure is not just among merchants, but it goes farther than that.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to the courthouse and judgment and justice. And that's why you find this sculpture in these kinds of places, that she is weighing things with proper weights. It's always level. The weights are always level. She's blindfolded because she doesn't change her weights according to the person that she's judging. Whether he's rich or poor, dark skin, light skin, male or female, none of those things matter to Lady Justice. And then the sword, of course, is the idea that if the judge ultimately finds a person guilty of not properly weighing things, then there is justice to be meted out, and it can be for their life, and, you know, the severity of crime. But there, of course, in Acts 17, it says that God, this is Paul's sermon to the Athenians on the Acropolis there in Athens, the center of Greek ideas and thought. But he ends his sermon with God has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he has appointed, and he has given assurance to all men in that he has raised him from the dead. So ultimately, this idea of the scales and justice goes all the way from our earthly existence in life and courthouses and people dealing fairly with one another on all kinds of human relationships, all the way to the final judgment, where God will be blindfolded in the sense that he is not a respecter of men, and that all of his judgments will be exactly right. And also there's a heaven and a hell. And the sword, or you know, the praise of the same who deals justly with God, with man.
Yeah. So what are some other ways in which, besides trading goods, that fair dealings would come into play and it reflects our integrity. I mean, Les has mentioned court dealings, courthouse, and civil justice. What else?
Raising children.
Okay. being fair in your dealings with them and not showing favoritism. Yeah, that's true. That does stem back to integrity a little bit, it does. Yeah.
You've said it, fair to your employers.
All right. How you treat your employers, how you treat your employee, how you treat your landlord, how you treat your leasee, all those kinds of things. What else? Yeah, Eric.
This won't be popular, but the fairness in paying taxes.
Yeah, okay.
With your brother?
Yeah, let's get, yeah, how you treat, yeah, your brother and his personal dealings. The tax thing.
May not be fair, but.
Yeah, the thing is, people cheat on their taxes. They get away with it. They can't catch everybody. But the Bible's very plain about paying your taxes, whether you think they're fair or not. And the taxes weren't so great for the Jews in the first century. They were not. They were pretty heavy. Heavier than what we pay. I know you don't believe me, but they were. Okay? And it's an integrity issue. It's between you and God. And, I mean, you know, it's a matter of consistency, too. And a person with integrity is consistent. Not just when somebody's looking. Now, just when there's an outcome that could be negative, but the principle of this is what God wants me to do, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to be true to that. Yeah. So there's this idea of dishonest versus honest gain. Look at chapter 20, verse 17. 20:17 says, "Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be full of gravel." What's the imagery there? And why is it so fitting?
Seems like a good idea at the time, but it's...
And even at the time, how does it taste?
Sweet.
That's right. It's, the experience is good. You feel so good that you just, you know, gotten that money or whatever, gotten that deal on that thing. But in time, there's a consequence to it, okay? You know, what is sweet becomes bitter, that kind of thing. And if you look over in 13:11, wealth gained hastily, or some translations by fraud, will dwindle. Whoever gathers little by little will increase it. This is an interesting proverb. And actually, the Greek in the New Testament is a lot more precise. There are places in the Old Testament where the Hebrew is very challenging. And the most challenging parts of the Old Testament for the Hebrew is in the poetry. And the English Standard, which does tend to be a little bit more literal, says, "gain hastily." But other translations say gain either dishonestly or fraudulently. What this implies is not you're just making money fast. There's a moral dimension to it. Have you ever heard of a get-rich-quick scheme? In almost every example of a get-rich-quick scheme, there is usually something unethical or shady about it. Sometimes something completely illegal about it. But oftentimes there's something... Either people are being manipulated or taking advantage of. There is something shady about get-rich-quick schemes. And so that's the point here, is that you gain wealth in an improper way, a dishonest way. It's a reflection of whether you have integrity or not. And this is, you know, you may gain it, but it's not going to be a blessing to you and other people. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.